Oh, that's right. We're right here, Sharp Facets Gallery. Hey, I'm Ann Eller, 4:07 in the afternoon. Tell you what, it's beautiful out there. It's supposed to get really cold tonight, down in the 20s, but it is beautiful out there now. If you can get outside and check it out, it would be a good time to, after the show, take a walk. Stay right with us while we're on the air this afternoon, because we have a great guest for you, Thomas Cool. Yes, he's cool. He's here to talk about pottery with Piedmont Tech. He's over there in Edgefield with the pottery program. He has quite a varied background, and I think we look like we're very fortunate to have him down here at Piedmont Tech to be instructing. So how are you doing today, Thomas Cool?
Very good.
Very good.
It's fun to be here.
It is. It is. And we're enjoying a cup of coffee here this afternoon. So if you hear a little slurping on the phone here, I mean on the radio, sorry about that. But Thomas, where are you from originally?
Originally from upstate New Jersey. And since then, I've been bouncing around most of the country this side of the Mississippi.
And you've also been over in Europe and Italy.
Yeah, just long enough to get a perspective on our culture by living in another culture, which I think is very helpful and I'd recommend to everybody.
Sure. So just out of curiosity, how did you get into art?
It's always hard looking back at it, you know. Probably fell into it as a kid, and well, and as I was telling you earlier, I started out college pre-law, and at some point I thought, okay, I went into law because I wanted to help people with their troubles, and law helps a person with one trouble in one time, and may or may not help them. And art tries to approach everybody's troubles, you know, without any specific time limitation. And I thought I'd switch over to sort of a bigger picture than a smaller picture. Yeah, that sounds kind
of interesting, really. That's really very interesting when you think about it. He was in pre-law, and he decided you could influence more people than just one at a time.
Yeah. It comes from a little bit of disillusionment with, you know, the anybody who pays attention to what lawyers do. I mean, there's pros and cons, you know, and very often, you know, you're serving the law, not serving people. And I was interested in law to serve people, not necessarily serve the letter of the law.
So, but what made you go into law to begin with?
Growing up in Florida, and what is it, the late 60s, early 70s, where there was, a lot of controversy about law. It was, you know, end of the Vietnam War. Society was changing so radically. And a lot of times, you know, figures in authority were a little bit behind on the change. And so
you were going to be a hip lawyer.
Well, public service lawyer, maybe. I wasn't doing
Did
it for the
money.
Did you have
long hair?
Oh, sure.
Sure. Okay. Oh. Just check it.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Ponytail. I can still probably braid my hair behind my back if I needed to, but no. I kind of like it about, you know, less than an inch now.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
And it's much more convenient. You know. Yeah. You know, but at the time, it was a necessary statement, I felt, at the time. A lot went on from the 50s.
You know, it is interesting when you look back how affected we are by all the things we know growing up. And particularly when you look at, as you get a little older and you look back at things, and particularly I think right now our society is changing very rapidly. There are things happening in society, in politics, and it makes you wonder, will we recognize the country that we grew up in?
Well, that's what everybody complains about. I think I have a picture of my great-grandmother standing next to a car that she refused to ever ride in. And my grandfather said he would never fly, and he never did. You know, who would imagine when somebody had walked on the moon, you know? And when you look at Father Knows Best and you look at society today, you say, hey, what's going on?
Exactly. You know,
can we imagine what will be 50, 75 years from now? No.
Well, don't you think, though, it's moving even faster than 50 to 75 years? Don't you think, can you imagine what it'll be like 20 years from now? I mean, we should still be living then.
And we can possibly imagine that, but 75, compared to looking back, if change is doubling, you know, I don't know, we could have three heads. Anything's possible.
That's right. They might decide two thumbs would be better on each hand, right?
No, that's my house joke is, you know, my problem with evolution is I want my tail. I could use an extra hand.
All right. Well, we are in for an interesting conversation this afternoon. We're talking with Thomas Kuhl. He is, now, you are not just pottery. You're much more expanded than pottery.
I would consider myself an artist. Clay is one thing I use, and just like wood is one thing I use. I mean, I can...
You built an ark.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I built an interpretation
of an ark, I guess we should call it, yes.
Well, I also have two boats in storage I haven't finished that, you know, are for sailing.
Okay.
So a material can do many things. You know, just like clay can make a pot, you know, clay can make a sculpture. If you go to Europe, most of the houses are made out of clay hollow tiles. I mean, it's a material. And so one person can do many different things with the material depending on what they want to say or do.
Sure.
So I'm perfectly comfortable to making abstract sculpture in clay or a teacup for tea. Just different reasons, different materials.
Now, do you work in other forms other than pottery? I mean, paint?
Yes.
Yes?
Painting, printmaking, occasionally writing. I just delivered a paper in, the Southeastern College Art Conference in Greensboro, and that's, I guess you could call that media, you know, writing down your thoughts on paper. That's all a very different and difficult media sometimes.
Do you find it difficult to get enough time to work on your art? That's one of the things that I think a lot of artists tell me, that they don't have enough time, particularly once they get into a commercial endeavor or teaching, this type of thing. It becomes more difficult.
That's an understatement. I mean, I think if I had nothing to do, I wouldn't have enough time.
Okay, well, there you go. Are you a procrastinator?
Well, I probably, you know, I have however many years, you know, I've been, you know, drawing of... or the sketchbooks of ideas I haven't gotten to yet. So, there's never enough time.
Never enough time. No. Now, you, of course, have taken over the pottery program in Edgefield. When you came down here, what did you think of the program that was already in place, and where are you going with the program?
Well, one of the reasons, you know, that I took the job is when I looked on the website, there was, I think, a video interview with one of the students, and they were talking about sort of a signature piece they had made. I think it was a woman who was making bells. And I thought, you know, which is such a great concept, and it's so important to actually making a living where you're usually making something that's a mainstay of your little economy.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying, that principle is something that I'm maintaining. The difference is that I'm trying to open up to almost anything made in clay. You know, I think right now one of my students, their mainstay item is chessboards and things related to chessboards. That's making, even more specifically, cigar ashtrays. So wow. I've sort of opened it up to, you know, what are you interested in? Can we make something out of clay? And how do we make that sort of the mainstay of your practice?
So you're trying to prepare them for making a living
doing
their art. Well, so many artists are not prepared to go out in the world and make a living. They want to do their art and they want people to accept it, but they don't have that making something that will be able to be sold.
Well,
why they call them starving artists, I think.
Well, our emphasis in the United States is, you know, economy and money. Mm-hmm. You know, I think maybe it's because we have such a young culture. You know, I think in Europe and certain countries, yeah, there are states that do fund the arts. But here you have to fund yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing more distracting to trying to make your artwork than, you know, there's no food in the refrigerator. So I think, you know, the two should work together, at least so you have food in the refrigerator. Don't have to be rich, but...
Got to be able to eat so you can work.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. Well, hey, I am here with Thomas Kuhl. We're going to have an interesting conversation, I think you'll find, this afternoon. So why don't you stay right with us right here on WCRS. That's 1450 AM on your radio dial. And don't forget, you can always hear us on the stream stream at WCRS1450AM.net. We're going to hear a quick word from our sponsors that make all this possible. We'll be right back.
Gold. Gold. More precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Ah, that's right. We're right back here at Sharp Facets Gallery. You know, one of the interesting things about Piedmont Tech and all our community colleges and everything is that they can really prepare somebody for a career. I mean, we have the automotive program. They can go out and make a living. The welding, I guess even the gunsmithing. Mm-hmm. I mean, they learn how to do these tasks that can make them make a living. How does pottery, can you go out and make a living in pottery?
Well, I think one of the things that we teach as part of the pottery program are the nuts and bolts of starting a business. And then it really depends on your motivation. You know, what is important is that we try to teach you the tools. If you're motivated, we teach you the tools. Okay. How do you write a budget? How do you write a business plan? You know, how can you create a website? You know, what are the different ways to sell your work? You know, how do you establish budgets to figure out, am I going to make money or not? What do I have to do to make money? But ultimately, if you're making a business on your own, it's your own self-motivation. And I think one of the important things about pottery is most people love to make it enough that they'll suffer through making a business out of it. No, one motivates the other rather than, you know, you're motivated by money, you're motivated by love. And that's a better motivation.
Well, you know, you can only have so many bowls in the house, right? You know, that you can keep for yourself. Eventually, you got to start selling or doing something with them, right?
Yeah, or start making other things. Remember, you know, like the Europeans, you can make the house out of, you know, clay, too. You can put the roof on it.
Yeah, know. Exactly.
That's one of the directions that I wanted to, and hopefully still will get the program going into making some more architectural things.
Some bigger things.
Well, in addition to pottery, the Edgefield area was known for bricks. I think there's a lot of companies out there making cheaper bricks than you can make handmade bricks. But I don't know that anybody's making glazed bricks anymore. There are decorative elements that you can add to brick courses, top and bottom, and moldings. There's lawn fixtures and ornamentation. There's a lot of different things that you can make in ceramic because it will hold up indefinitely outdoors while plastic and metals will not. There's a lot of options that haven't been explored.
You know, one of the things about Edgefield, you know, and having the program in Edgefield is the history behind all this.
Which is precisely why someone with great wisdom put it there, yes.
But it's neat.
It is neat.
And I think a lot of people, you know, could be listening right now that know, okay, Edgefield Pottery. But, you know, it really has such history, and they really have a great program. And I would think one of the things would be to get people down there to be able to see all that goes on down there.
Yeah, we have in downtown, it's actually a nice old original downtown that hasn't been messed up commercially, which is rare to find in the United States anymore.
They have all the big turkeys.
And there's a bit, Aiken has turkeys.
Turkeys, yeah, those are cool.
There is old Edgefield Pottery where there's a couple potters there recreating as accurately as possible the old historical examples, you know, jugs and bottles and, you know, various traditional forms, and they're actually firing them just outside of town in an old groundhog kiln, which is the original style of kiln that was introduced in the mid-1800s. They've recreated one, and they're actually firing it with wood in this kiln.
Didn't they use that when they did the pottery tour? Did they pack that? It was an outside kiln, and it was packed with all kinds of pottery that they were firing at one time, and they were taking it all out. Am I wrong on that?
Well, they fire it regularly. Yeah. They fired it about 2 weeks ago. I think the next firing is December 2nd, I believe.
But do they take, and they put a lot of pottery in there at one time, right, rather than...
Not as much as in the old days. I think the... there's a kiln, I think it was the University of Illinois or Indiana, I'm not sure which, who came down and excavated again this past summer. And the summer, two summers before, they had sort of excavated and they were expecting something 20 foot long, and the kiln turned out to be 100 foot long.
Wow.
Because it was such a major production center at that time.
What did they produce at this kiln?
Well, everything, all the food was stored in ceramic containers. And prior to the, what was his name, Dr. Landrum,
right?
He did some research and found out that the higher temperatures that were being produced in China produced a waterproof, impervious, non-poisonous ceramic.
Porcelain?
Porcelain and stoneware.
Right. Okay.
Before that, we were using low-fire lead-based glazes.
Lead-based glazes, good for food, keeping food in it.
Well, at the time, they didn't know. lead was easy. It melted easy.
Right. Still does.
Yeah, still does.
Exactly.
We just didn't know that it would leach into our bodies over time and accumulate.
And we wondered why they died younger. No, just teasing. Yeah, it was probably part of it. But,
So he brought this information back, and the groundhog kilns, and they are sort of like what they sound. They're a long tunnel going up a hill covered over at the top with a low arch of bricks that potters would crawl into to load their work. They were based on the Chinese kilns, which were a little bit more elegant and a little bit more complicated since they had several thousand years to refine them.
Sure.
But they started out originally as holes in the hillside. They started a fire at one end and the smoke came out the other end, and after a while your pots inside were fired.
Isn't that amazing how somebody comes up with the idea to do that, though?
Well, it probably happened over a long period of time.
Right, but still.
You know, there was this lump of clay. They theorized there was a lump of clay and somebody built a fire on it. And after the fire was over, what's this hard thing down here at the bottom? And so there was ceramic.
I still think it is amazing how we go from point A to point B on things like that, on early inventions. You know, today I don't think, even though there are tremendous inventions that are done, but we don't look at it in the same amazement that we got from point A to point B, because technology is just everywhere and everything is happening. But when you go back hundreds of years and you see this happening, it's pretty phenomenal to me anyway.
Well, but when you look at, what was it, the first computers were warehouse size?
Yes.
And now our iPhone, does that 10 times faster. We're moving pretty, it's still pretty amazing.
It is, exactly.
Depends on the perspective.
But to put hundreds, so when they would have this, they would get out the drums and beat the drums, and on Thursday we're going to be loading the kiln. Anybody that has stuff, get your stuff over here, huh?
Well, that's sort of what, that's what we're coming back to.
Okay.
At the time when the first groundhog kilns were built, it was a factory. It was a human factory. Because everything at that time was, all the food that wasn't eaten today was stored in ceramic.
And now we're actually coming back to using ceramic rather than all these plastic containers and whatnot that we have.
That, I believe, is the direction we're just, starting to see that movement. Everybody's finding out that plastic is not as perfect and as benign as it seems, and it leaches various ingredients. And I was actually thinking on the way over here, probably over the course of our lifetime, we'll go through 50 or 100, dollar plastic containers. Well, we could have gone through one $20 ceramic container.
Yeah.
So it's, we're not really saving any money.
No, we're convenience, I guess,
yeah,
has been
convenience.
The thing. Convenience. Yeah. And yet when you see the mountains that they say that if they put plastic bottles end to end, across the country, and what you would end up with, it is phenomenal how many are used.
Well, there's a big island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean that's swirling around. I think it's several hundred feet thick, and we're filling the world with plastic, and it's kind of junky plastic, though, after it's been around for a year.
Exactly.
No longer a miracle.
Yeah, that's right. But today down there, you have quite a modern facility.
Yes. We're trying to, span the range from holes in the ground with wood, to computer-controlled and measured. And we have kilns that are electric that you can programmed to do all sorts of fancy things and then shut off by themselves. But we just did a project where students built kilns out of clay and materials and then fired them with sticks of wood, like, you know, the first potters, you know, from, you know, 10,000 years ago did.
And how'd it work?
Pretty well. Our wood source was a little damp. We're going to do it again with drier wood.
Drier wood, I like it. Hey, you've got to stay here right with us. We are here with Thomas Cool. He is with Piedmont Tech's pottery program. So don't you go away. News is in progress. We'll be back.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help. From McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, that's right. We're back here. We're talking about art. We're talking about what it takes to have a cottage industry that brings different things to the table so that people will look at something as a potential to make money. And of course, you've been telling me about some of the people that get into the pottery program are actually people that have already had careers doing different things.
Yeah, I think particularly in the past 20, 30 years, many people started out wanting to do something creative in their life and decided, no, I need to do something practical to make money. And now that they've lived a good part of their life and they thought, well, okay, here I have, I've made money and it was practical and I don't feel fulfilled, they're coming back to pick up the thing that they thought was less important.
You know, yeah.
Because they found out it was very important. So, yes, we have a lot of people that are coming back to their creative interest to sort of rekindle that creative fire. And some of them have been very, very successful at it.
You know, I think that would be interesting. And, you know, one of the things that I think you always fight against or fight yourself with, if you are a creative person but you're boxed, for lack of a better way to say it, because of your career and your family and all the things that you have to do, I wonder how it is for that person to be able to sit down and say, okay, now I can create. Is it difficult to start?
I think creativity is something that I believe that we're all born with it, and I think any parent's refrigerator will testify to that. But then it depends on whether it's nurtured or not.
Sure.
You know, and if you have creativity and it's been nurtured, the practical sides of supporting your creativity, you know.
But what if it hasn't? What if you've had to set it aside because of taking care of the family, taking care of, like we're talking about people coming back to it. But I was just thinking, the person that always wanted to do, but if their creative side has been, I'll use the word shut down, mm-hmm. because they've had so much other, how easy is it to bring it to life? Like you sit there and you look at that lump of clay and you say, God, that just looks like a lump of clay.
Yeah, I mean, it's as varied as people are, you know, the speed at which their creativity returns are just as varied as different people. I mean, I was just talking about someone that's, you know, he's actually worked in all sorts of different businesses, most recently with auto repair. He's progressing, you know, faster in 6 months than students that have been there for a number of years. And then he's just had this pent-up passion, and he's putting every spare minute to work. And, you know, what you want, what you practice at, you get.
Sure. We've got some art here by Inglés, a guy named Inglés, and he loved painting, mm-hmm. and then he got into the practical side of business. He was in pharmaceutical sales and this type of thing, and now that he has retired, he is doing fantastic things and making money at it, mm-hmm. and he never thought he could even make money at it. Some of the pieces that are out there in the store, the big splashy impressionist type pieces are his, Dick Inglés. So
I think, was it Louise Bourgeois, who was, I think, a year or so ago. She was a very famous sculptor who really didn't reach fame until she was in her late 70s.
Well, there's still hope for me. Is that what you're telling me here today?
There's still hope for anybody at any time.
Okay.
I mean, it's like we have students from 20 to, I think we have a student who's in their mid-80s. So, I mean, age is not a limiting or deciding factor. Interest is the only thing that counts. Never too late or too soon.
Well, you know, now, the pottery program itself at Piedmont Tech, this is one where you, how long does the program take?
The minimum would be, well, there's two certificates. One is three semesters, so you could say a full year or a year and a half if you think in school terms. And then there's a subsequent certificate that's another two semesters. You know, so technically you could say it would be, what's that, a year and a half or so, yeah.
So when you finish this program, you would be able to...
You should have a general sense, depending on how well you studied and how much time and how much work you put into it. You should be have an idea and a competence to do whatever you've decided to specialize in and quite and be able to open the kind of business that you've also studied to open, whether that be a retail location, whether it be a wholesaler, a manufacturer. I mean, there's lots of different ways of approaching the money side of the ceramics. And we try to specialize to help each person go the direction they want to go in. You know, technically, you know, it's a very short period of time, you know, to walk out of that program and say, oh, I'm a professional potter ceramicist, you know, I know everything. Well, no, that's not true. I mean, people work all their lives, you know, at ceramics. It's something that, you know, catches hold of you and, you know, you wake up one day and it's been 30 years.
Well, you know, it's kind of like the movie, what is it, Ghost?
Yeah, I haven't
you know,
seen it.
You haven't ever seen that movie? Oh, my God. How can you be teaching pottery if you've never seen that movie?
Everybody, I probably saw it 30 years ago or whatever.
But everybody thinks of the romanticism of making pottery and doing this. But the reality is, how much does it cost if you said, okay, I want to sign up for this program, I want to be in the program, and then how much does it cost to put together your own potter's place?
Well, you can go out there and probably spend many thousands of dollars if you want, you know, the best things, you know, all brand new and shiny and your beautiful new building. Or you can probably put the whole thing together for under $1,000 by buying used equipment and being a wise shopper. And you can do it a little bit at a time.
Now, when you were talking about making a kiln, and you were just telling me you actually all are going to be making a kiln out of used brick that you've gotten.
So there's many ways. Okay, we talked about, you know, the first kilns were holes in the ground. You can still dig a hole in the ground and fire your pottery in it.
Okay.
I mean, you can look on the internet. There's people still doing it.
Are they called doomsday preppers?
There's all sorts of names for them.
Okay, all right, sounds good.
We're working on building a couple very large kilns, you know, large being, you know, you can go inside of them, you know, and close the door out of bricks.
It's called a sauna?
Yeah. Very, very dry sauna.
Okay, all right.
We found some used bricks in northern Alabama that were part of a furnace or foundry up there, and we managed to get them brought here. But at the same time, in the Greenwood Public Library right now is a small kiln that we built with students that is could fit on your kitchen table. That was built out of clay and other materials, you know, ground up fire brick and actually sawdust as well to make a little bit more insulatory. And we're also just finished building a kiln out of an old electric kiln that somebody had given us. So we took out the electrical elements and we cut a hole in the side. I found somebody who had these cheap gas burners in, I think, Seattle that I had sent here. And we'll probably, you know, so we have a little gas kiln for probably under $100. So, I mean, there's all different ways of doing things. You know, you could also, I think I've seen a big industrial kiln for sale. We used one that was about $150,000 that you could drive your car in and fire. So there's options.
But the bottom line is that this truly is, you could truly have a cottage industry of doing this.
Absolutely.
And you could get into it even if you did it part-time while you did something else.
Yes.
As you developed the
Many
art.
Of our students are doing that. You know, it's they're approaching it as, I want my hobby to pay for itself. You know,
sure.
And a lot of them are finding that suddenly they're making more money than paying themselves, and suddenly it's like, oh, I can't make enough work. I'm selling it faster than I make it. You know? So there's a whole range. I mean, all you have to do is drive north into North Carolina, and suddenly there's potters everywhere of all sorts.
Sure.
Know? I don't know why they all moved to North Carolina or trying to make some more down here.
Well, I think didn't North Carolina actually promoted the arts and that whole cottage and then the mountains and the whole thing. They were very advanced, shall we say, at promoting that in their area, and so that's where they came from.
The state has taken pains to say this is important to our culture. We'll bring tourists here. It's going to help all our other industries, and it has. You know, so they've created a hospitable environment. South Carolina, I think, is starting to think that way, or some people are.
Mm-hmm.
It's ironic that the birthplace of stoneware, everybody moved to all the other surrounding states, you know.
Exactly. And here it was right here in Edgefield, South Carolina, also home of 10 governors. Hey, we're going to hear a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Gold dust at my feet.
This year will be a simpler year. One fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love. A diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood, 229-6276.
Well, I just learned something very interesting on the air, well, off the air here, that I think just should give us all hope to go out in this world and try something. We're talking with Thomas Kuhl this afternoon. He is head of the Piedmont Tech Pottery Program that actually originates out of Edgefield. And Thomas, you just told me you got a D the first time you took pottery.
Yeah.
I had to repeat
it. And it didn't do enough work. And went from there to supporting myself during undergraduate by making pottery. And I made pottery as a living, and that was my way of supporting myself going through school. But
so I
it
guess
was a rough start.
Hope, I guess that's hope for everyone. Is that what you're telling us here today?
It's about what you know. Whatever you desire to do, if you have enough desire, you will do it. You know, if you want
so
to be president of the United States enough, you will, as long as you're born here. There are rules.
There are rules. So did getting that D inspire you? Or what did it do to you at the time?
I was probably indignant at the time. And, you know, it's like, what, I didn't make enough pots? You know, I'll show you. And I probably made too many the next time.
Okay. How'd you do the second time through the course?
No, I'm sure I got an A the second time.
Okay, it's not memorable, though, because the D was what was memorable. Okay.
Well, I think what was the other, we use these round pieces of wood, you know, to put on top of the wheel. To put her pots on. I think I got the name of Bat Pig because I used too many bats because I made too many pots the second time.
Okay. All right. So now if somebody is listening to all this and they say, hey, you know, I'm interested, can they just come down to Edgefield and see what it's all about?
Absolutely. We're there Monday through Thursday for sure. Anytime from 8:30 or so till 5. If you want to call, you can make other arrangements. And always welcome visitors. Always fun to have people see what we're doing. We're always doing something.
Well, and it sounds like that they get a lot of exposure. It's not just come in, make this pot, and then we take it over here and put it in the kiln, which is what you kind of think of when you think of pottery. I mean, if you're building kilns down there and doing all this other interesting stuff, sounds like you're never for a loss for things to do.
No, that's an understatement. Because there's so much, so many things that you can learn and they should have some idea about from, you know, it would be nice if everybody could dig their own hole in the ground and fire their own kiln that way too.
Right.
Because our goal is when you graduate from the program that you are able to do anything you want in clay. And if that means, you know, like we just recently, we had to build some kilns around pots that were too big for our existing kilns. And I want people to be able to do that so they're not, say, okay, if I want to build a house out of clay, how do I do it?
Right.
Have the knowledge. And it is possible to do. You can make a clay house and fire it and then walk in after it cools down and live in it. You know, it's challenging, but it's possible.
Okay. All right.
My job is to, you know, show them, you know, how do you achieve possibility.
Now, since you're doing all this teaching and everything, what's happened to your art? Are you still doing art?
In those spare moments, you know, as much as I can. Not as much as I would like, of course.
Sure.
It's probably the biggest challenge. You know, to teach and do all these things and try to get that, you know, free time, you know, mental space, as I like to call it, to work on my own work.
Sure. And when you talk about cost in doing pottery through Piedmont Tech, I mean, Piedmont Tech, actually most community colleges are known for being affordable. That's one of the great things about
mm-hmm.
it. But,
probably an understatement.
Yeah. How about the pottery program? Affordable? Great place to learn? What can you tell us?
Probably, I don't know if it's the cheapest place in the country. It might be. Certainly when you balance, you know, what you learn in exchange for what you're paying for tuition, I'm sure it is, you know, the most reasonable place in the Southeast. Yeah. I haven't done enough computer research, you know, to say, well, just somewhere out in the, you know. Because there aren't that many professional pottery programs. I know there's quite a few in North Carolina. I suspect their tuition is a little bit more. One, I think, in British Columbia. But that's as much as I've been able to discover.
And, of course, the other neat thing about it is it's right here, and it's right in a very historical area of the country, right there in Edgefield, mm-hmm. where pottery literally started in the Southeast.
Yes.
So what better place to learn where you can actually know that the clay actually came from that area.
You have a pedigree right away.
Yeah, there you go. I learned in Edgefield.
All right. yeah, it's, what is it? You know, was I reading Dave the Potter's, some
Dave
of his
Potter,
big
yep.
jars are what, 400,000, 40,000, and some, you know, multiple thousands?
Yeah.
So right away you could say, well, I made this right down the street from Dave. You got to pay a little more for it.
Exactly.
Not just anybody's.
There was a place, I went to school in Greensboro, North Carolina, and I cannot remember it, but in North Carolina that was very famous, not far from Greensboro, where the potters and everything had a area. Now, down in Edgefield, do they have a lot of potters in the area?
There are quite a few potters in the area. Actually, it's sort of a, I would say from North Augusta to Lexington to Greenwood, there's a circle of people that were educated, you know, or had some education from PTC's program.
So there, so it is kind of establishing itself. I can't remember the name of the area there, but it was pretty famous right there in North Carolina because of the
Seagrove,
clay.
Seagrove, maybe?
Yes,
I know that's
it is.
One
yeah,
of the, yeah,
yeah,
that's,
Seagrove.
That's, and that's advertising and promotion, I think. We could have that same kind of promotion here in, you know, Edgefield, Greenwood, if everybody would get together and say, okay, we want to make something of ceramics in, you know, the Southeast United States. We could be the destination instead of Charleston. It's, you know, Charleston said, hey, we're going to make the most of our history. We haven't done that here yet.
Well,
potential is here, but we just haven't done it.
And is that something you're working on?
That's one of my hats that I'm wearing.
One of your hats you're wearing. Now, is the program full? How long does it take to get in the program?
Far from full. We're waiting for you to register. Registration
okay.
is open.
And do you have to take it in a certain order? Like, do you have to sign up for the fall to start and then go through the spring?
You can start any time. I think registration is now open, and classes start in January.
But
I know.
Can you start a beginning pottery class in January and then go through the program?
Yes.
Or,
yes.
Okay.
I mean, at this point, you know, we don't have a waiting list, so you know, the sort of the ball is in the student's court, which
okay.
makes it, you know, a little bit easier for them.
Sure.
And I'm trying to be as accommodating as possible, you know, to new students, you know, because we need students. You know,
sure.
the more students, you know, the more ideas, the more things going on. And due to the way that, you know, the federal funds and economy are going, got to have those students, or the federal government says you can't have that program. So,
and that would be a shame to have
yes,
such
it would.
A beautiful facility down there and not to have it utilized.
Yeah.
So if you'd like a combination of creative and a possibility of being able to make some money at something. Mm-hmm. Maybe one should look at the pottery program and see what all is available and put the pen to the pencil to the potter's wheel and see what you can come up with.
Yeah, make money with something you love.
Exactly. I mean, pottery is so tactile, too.
Yes.
You know, I think that's the other thing about it. And you can really create, and you can do, well, Dick Inglaze was in here this afternoon, and he does, of course, these big art. And he says, you know, every once in a while I see some of the art that I've sold, and I look back on it, and I said, wow, that really sold. And you can do the same thing with pottery or anything. You can mm-hmm. find a design that works. You can do so many and then stop it, bring it back. It is a phenomenal thing.
Pottery is very accessible to people, too. I think it's much easier to sell pottery to someone than it is to sell a painting. Because I think, oh, you know, I may not like it, but I can use it, you know.
Exactly.
It also has this dual role of function and beauty.
Now, when you do a pottery piece, can they be microwave? Proof?
All the normal. I'm still using dishes that I made, I think, in 1980, and I'm still using them. I mean, I've broken one over the years, but, you know, and all the stuff, dishwasher, microwave, you know, banging
in the sink.
Because
that's important, too. Yes,
yeah,
to be able to have something that is usable. You know, I love the bowls that we always get at the soup kitchen for mm-hmm. the empty bowls, and it's always so nice to see all the variety there and pick out a special bowl. It really means a lot. So maybe we've inspired some people to take a look at the pottery program here this afternoon.
I hope so. At least come take a look. Come visit.
Absolutely. Yeah, you would do yourself a favor and maybe find a lifetime love. For those of you that are unemployed and maybe looking for something to do, this would be an excellent opportunity to see a future. And who knows, when you get those creative juices rolling, maybe some other ideas will flow.
I know. There's the state lottery assistance, which pays half of your tuition. And then if you haven't used it up already, the federal government wants to give you money to go back to school. So there are many options.
And the pottery program qualifies.
Yes, absolutely.
Hey, there you go. Hey, this is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Thomas Cool, thanks so much.
Fun.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye, everybody.
Take care.